Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janna Balaba Kiravarid Hare. Gopi Janna Balaba Kiravarid Hare. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Bhavraja Gitara Sotara Sada Shri Shimana's Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Nandakota Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premananda. All glorious to some of the devotees. All glorious to some of the devotees. All glorious to some of the devotees. All glorious to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna. Welcome again, everybody, to our Sunday feast program. Today we are celebrating the appearance day of Lord Ramachandra. The actual day is Tuesday. It's coming up, the appearance of Lord Ramachandra, but because, of course, we have so many visitors here on Sunday, we're going to be talking about Lord Ramachandra's appearance today. I'm going to begin by reading some verses from the ninth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where the glories of Lord Ramachandra are written about. So, I'll just read the translation. The verses by Srila Prabhupada. This is, going to read text 2 of chapter 10 and text 4. And it's kind of a summary of the entire pastimes of that are much more elaborately discussed in the Ramayana. This sort of summarizes in about 4 verses. Okay. So text 2, I'll read the Sanskrit, just this one verse. Tashapi Bhagavan Nesha Sakshad Brahmayo Hari Amsham Sena Chaturdhagat Putradvam Partita Sarai Ramalakshman Bharach Bharata Shatrughna Iti Samgyaya. Translation. Being prayed for by the demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth Himself, directly appeared with His expansion and expansions of the expansions. Their holy names were Ram, Lakshman, Bharata, and Shatrughna. These celebrated incarnations thus appeared in 4 forms as the sons of Maharaj Dasharath. And then text 4 is the summary of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes. To keep the promise of his father intact, Lord Ramachandra immediately gave up the position of king, and accompanied by his wife, Mother Sita, wandered from one forest to another on his lotus feet, which were so delicate that they were unable to bear even the touch of Sita's palms. The Lord was also accompanied by Hanuman, and or another monkey, Sugriva, king of the monkeys, and by his own younger brother, Lord Lakshman, both of whom gave him relief from the fatigue of wandering in the forest. Having cut off the nose and ears of Shurpanakha, thus disfiguring her, the Lord was separated from Mother Sita. He therefore became angry, moving his eyebrows and thus frightening the ocean, who then allowed the Lord to construct a bridge to cross the ocean. Subsequently, the Lord entered the kingdom of Ravana to kill him, like a fire devouring a forest. May the Supreme Lord Ramachandra give us all protection. So, of course, the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra are very extensive, and we could spend hours and days just talking about the different pastimes of Lord Ram, and I'm sure you all can do that, and you have, you know, books on the Ramayana and other areas where we can could discuss so much of Lord Ramachandra. But I guess rather than all of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes, I'd like to speak a little bit tonight about the meaning of Lord Ramachandra, sort of what his purpose on this earth was, and what lessons we can learn from the life and the example of Lord Ramachandra. Of course, Lord Ramachandra appears in Treta Yuga hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years ago. This is before, of course, Krishna appeared in this in the Dwapara Yuga later. And so Lord Ramachandra was the Lila avatar who appeared in the during the Treta Yuga. And as such, he performed many, many pastimes as a direct expansion or incarnation of Krishna. Like all incarnations of Krishna, he fulfilled the purposes given in the Bhagavad Gita, Parichanaya Sadhunam Vanashaya Chaduskritam Dharma Samsarpanartayo Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. So he came to deliver the devotees, to vanquish the demons, and to establish religious principles. And he did this by performing so many wonderful pastimes as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, of course, he had so many wonderful devotees, like Hanuman, of course, his most famous devotee, his the servitor monkey in the body of a monkey, and, of course, his brother Lakshman, and all of the citizens of Ayodhya who were very, very loyal devotees of him. So he by performing so many wonderful pastimes, he gave great pleasure to his devotees. He also, of course, destroyed the demons. Ravana had actually taken over the entire universe and was the most fearsome demon of that time. And he was easily killed by Lord Ramachandra when they invaded Sri Lanka after the kidnapping of Sita. And of course, by establishing religious principles, Lord Ramachandra is very, very famous as the embodiment of religion. He was Dharma personified, practically. In fact, his kingdom, which is called Ram Raj, is famous to this day for the type of religious principle and integrity that every good government should exhibit. We'll talk about that a little bit more. So, while, of course, Lord Krishna, when he came on this planet, Krishna, God himself, appeared in his original form, he also performed many, many wonderful pastimes. And Krishna's pastimes are so much relished and beloved by the devotees, but we understand that Krishna's pastimes are not to be imitated by devotees. Of course, we couldn't possibly imitate lifting Govardhan Hill or killing so many demons, but also his pastimes with the gopis and other pastimes like that. Srila Prabhupada has made it very clear that these are to be appreciated, to be relished, to be enjoyed, but not to be imitated. Never to put ourselves in that position. And always understand that his pastimes are very, very special and unique as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Ramachandra's pastimes are a little bit different. Well, of course, they're equally wonderful, and we equally cannot imitate such incredible things as crossing the waters between India and Sri Lanka, killing so many demons, and so many wonderful things he performed. But we can emulate, or at least try to follow in the footsteps of the very many wonderful examples he gave of following religious principles. So Ramachandra actually set an example to be emulated by human society. He showed the example of being a perfect king, a perfect leader and a ruler. He was a perfect husband, and he also was a perfect devotee. So he gave such a great example that everybody could follow. And that's why to this day, Lord Ramachandra is revered and is worshipped by so many, many devotees all over the world, and of course, particularly in India, where Lord Ramachandra is very, very popular and very established in so many temples. And of course, practically everybody reads the pastimes of the Ramayana of Lord Ramachandra, because he did set this wonderful example that we can all learn from. Some examples of how Lord Ramachandra was a perfect king. It's described that his rule was so good, was so perfect, that nobody suffered in his kingdom. This is described a little farther on in the 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In text 53, it says, "When Lord Ramachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was king of this world, all bodily and mental suffering, disease, old age, bereavement, lamentation, distress, fear, and fatigue were completely absent. There was not even death for those who did not want it." So we don't see too many of our politicians today making these kind of claims. No rulers today can protect their citizens in such a way that there's not even any old age, no bereavement, no lamentation. There was not even any sadness or sorrow in the entire kingdom, because everything was ruled so wonderfully and religious principles were upheld so well that the demigods are pleased and everything wonderful was bestowed upon the people. So this is, of course, a very special example of Lord Ramachandra. I also wanted to read a little bit from a few verses earlier, 9:10:50, and read some of Srila Prabhupada's purport that explains what real governance should be on this earth. So text 50, "Being pleased by the full surrender and submission of Lord Bharata, Lord Ramachandra then accepted the throne of the state. He cared for the citizens exactly like a father, and the citizens, being fully engaged in their occupational duties of Varna Ashram, accepted him as their father." Srila Prabhupada says, "People are very fond of the pattern of Ram Raj, and even today politicians sometimes form a party called Ram Raj, but unfortunately they have no obedience to Lord Ram. It is sometimes said that people want the kingdom of God without God. Such an aspiration, however, is never to be fulfilled. Good government can exist when the relationship between the citizens and the government is like that exemplified by Lord Ramachandra and his citizens. Lord Ramachandra ruled his kingdom exactly as a father takes care of his children, and the citizens, being obliged to the good government of Lord Ramachandra, accepted the Lord as their father. Thus, the relationship between the citizens and the government should be exactly like that between father and son. When the sons in a family are well trained, they are obedient to the father and mother, and when the father is well qualified, he takes care of the children. It's indicated here by the words Svadharma Nirata Varnashrama Gunavita. The people were good citizens because they accepted the institution of Varna and Ashram, which arranges society in the Varna divisions of Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, and the ashram divisions of Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprast, and Sannyas. This is actual human civilization." Then going towards the end of the purport, "Generally speaking, if the king or president is a Rajarshi," because Rajarshi means a saintly king, Raja is king, Rishi means a saint or a sage, "the relationship between the citizens and the chief executive will be clear, and there will be no possibility of disruption in the state, because the number of thieves and rogues will decrease. In Kali Yuga, however, because the Varnashram system is neglected, people are generally thieves and rogues. In the system of democracy, such thieves and rogues naturally collect money from other thieves and rogues, and thus there is chaos in every government, and no one is happy. But here the example of good government is to be found in the reign of Lord Ramachandra. If people follow this example, there will be good government all over the world." So there are very many important lessons that we learn from Lord Ramachandra. We learn about the proper relationship between a government leader and the citizens. It's described here that it should be one that is similar to a father and a child. In other words, there is a perfect reciprocation where the child is very respectful, very grateful, but the father also gives all protection. Of course, today in our society in Kali Yuga, we see not only do leaders not give this protection to the people, but rather they often exploit the people for their own personal gain But even parents don't take care of the children often. So we see so many problems, so much child abuse, neglect, things like this that go on within our families. This is all symptomatic of Kali Yuga. And we can see that it starts from the top. If our leaders do not have the same or at least similar qualities to be able to emulate as Lord Ramachandra did, of being able to give good care and protection to their citizens, then how will the citizens take up that same activity and have that same type of care, concern, and protection to their dependents? So over and over again, in so many places, that Srila Prabhupada has told us this very, very important principle, you know, that whatever great men do, the common man will follow. This is from the course from the Bhagavad Gita. It's described that whatever the leaders do, then that sets the tone for the entire society. So today we have a dearth of good leadership. We do not have leaders, rulers, whether they be presidents, whether they be kings, in whatever particular form they may take. It really makes very little difference, because it's not the type of government, but it's the quality of the person that's the problem. And if the quality of the leader is such that they are not really concerned with the welfare of the citizens, that every citizen is happy, is satisfied, is taken care of, if that's not there, then there's not going to be happiness throughout the country. There certainly will not be religious principles, and there will not be a progressive civilization that brings everybody more and more to the point of religious principles and ultimately to Krishna consciousness. So that's why Srila Prabhupada so often explains, or in fact right here in this verse, it's described that this system of Varnashram is necessary. This is the Vedic system for the structure of society, so that everybody is working according to their proper role, everybody's in their proper place, and everybody is taking care of the responsibilities given to them. You know, so, of course, it's a very tall order to try to restore this, and it may or may not be possible to restore the Varnashram society in this Kali Yuga, but we certainly should at least understand these principles of religion that are given to us by the great examples in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and particularly by our glorious incarnation like Lord Ramachandra. Yeah. It's interesting because some years ago I was studying this concept that somewhat popular today called servant leadership. It's a modern term, but it's the idea that some people finally realize that one who is a leader is actually the servant of everyone else. You know, it's like they just discovered this in the last decade or so. But it's a very interesting concept, and the people who are into this often are a little bit pious or religious. And the idea that they're saying is that a leader doesn't mean that you simply have the most power, or you have the most control, you're able to control resources, you're able to get all the money you want, you're able to order other people around. This is not what real leadership is. Real leadership, the best leader is the best servant, one who actually takes responsibility for the care of those that are under them. So this modern concept, of course, was exemplified a million years ago by Lord Ramachandra. This is the beginning of this. So Lord Ramachandra actually was this perfect example, because he didn't see himself, even though he's the supreme personality of Godhead, he's the Lord himself, he's the king of the entire, you know, planet. And he saw his role that he was servant to every one of his citizens. That his job, his responsibility, his duty was to see that everyone was happy, to the extent that there was not even going to be disease or sadness or sorrow anywhere in his kingdom. Now, of course, that may be impossible for anyone today, but still we can understand that this is the highest exemplar of a real leader. And those who are leaders, you know, need to take example and at least consider that this is, you know, the perfect example for us. So Lord Ramachandra was not only the perfect king and the perfect leader, always seen to the welfare of his citizens, but he was also the perfect husband. It's described in text 54 that Lord Ramachandra took this vow of ekapatni vrata, which means that he would only have one wife. Now that may seem so, why is that unusual? Of course, because that's pretty much our standard or our norm. But, of course, in those days, very, very common four, you know, great kings who had all, you know, fantastic wealth and very easy for them to provide for unlimited numbers of family members, often had large families and more than one wife. But Lord Ramachandra did not do this. Text 54 says, Lord Ramachandra took a vow to accept only one wife and have no connection with any other women. He was a saintly king, and everything in his character was good, untinged by qualities like anger. He taught good behavior for everyone, especially for householders, in terms of Varnashram Dharma. Thus he taught the general public by his personal activities. So again, he not only showed example as the perfect king, but as the perfect householder. Of course, very loyal to his family, to Mother Sita. And of course, he, when Mother Sita was kidnapped by Ravana, you know, he spent months and months searching for her until finally learning that she had been taken to the island of Sri Lanka. Of course, he dispatched an entire army and eventually, of course, defeated Ravana and the entire army of Rakshasas. But beyond that, the relationships between Sita and Ram that you read about in the Ramayana are very, very sweet, very, very wonderful. They have a very wonderful, loving relationship of great respect and great kindness and great care and service to one another. So this perfect example is set there as a perfect husband by Lord Ramachandra. Of course, Sita also gave the perfect example as the perfect chaste wife. So, of course, it was reciprocal. He was the example of the perfect husband, but Sita was the example of the perfect wife. And, of course, her chastity and her loyalty was so great, and that even all the time that she was captured in Sri Lanka and she was tormented by the Rakshasas and by Ravana, of course, she remained totally true to Lord Ramachandra. And, of course, once Lord Ramachandra defeated Ravana and he recaptured, brought back Sita, and this was a pastime just to show Sita's purity. He pretended to act like, well, he wasn't sure whether Sita was still pure. So, of course, in this gave Sita the opportunity to walk into the blazing fire and, of course, be totally protected and brought out by Agnidev, the god of fire, to show her complete purity. So this was, of course, very much appreciated by all the citizens, and of course by Lord Ramachandra, that she was the perfect wife, the perfect chaste wife. Of course, there's a later story where one of the citizens didn't appreciate it, but that's a whole other story when Sita becomes banished. Ramachandra was also the perfect son. He showed this example of total respect for seniors, for elders. Of course, he was always serving his spiritual masters. He was always doing anything that they bid, any of the great sages and saints, anything they ask him, oh, please, these demons are bothering us, I'll take care of them. Yes, anything you ask, I will do. And of course, he performed the greatest sacrifice by following his father's order to give up the throne and be banished for 14 years to the forest. 14 years? Is that right? Yeah, 14 years. I was thinking the Pandavas in exile, which how many years? Anyway, yeah, so this was not only a great example of his devotion to his father, because his father had once given his second wife a boon, that she could ask him anything she wanted because she had saved him on the battlefield one time. Unfortunately, she was very, very envious of Ramachandra because her son, of course, Bharat, she wanted him to be king. So before Ramachandra was to be crowned the next king of Ayodhya, she demanded of Dasarath that he banish Ramachandra and install Bharata as the king. Of course, this totally broke Dasarath's heart, and eventually, of course, he gave up his life. But because he was a man of such tremendous honor, the Kshatriyas in those days, whatever they said, whatever word that they gave, they would never break. So he said he had to fulfill this. And so very, very sadly, he told Ramachandra about this. And of course, Ramachandra, without hesitation, without argument, without saying, now, wait a minute, let's talk about this. How can we get around this? This doesn't seem right. He said, yes, Father, I accept. Immediately he goes to the forest, gives up his throne, gives up the kingdom, and goes banished to the forest for 14 years. Of course, Bharata Maharaj also was very brokenhearted. This isn't what he wanted. And so he ruled in absentia, in a sense, for Lord Ramachandra. You know, and he put Ramachandra's shoes on the altar, or on the throne. You know, and he recognized he was only caretaking the government for the rightful king, Lord Ramachandra. So this is an example not only of being a perfect son, but a perfect devotee and a perfect renunciate. The Lord Ramachandra showed that even if one has the entire kingdom of the world for the purposes of Dharma and for the fulfillment of religious principle and for the principle of integrity and following the word that one has given, one would be ready to sacrifice the entire kingdom to walk away at a moment's notice. So this example of renunciation is a great lesson for us. Whatever we have doesn't matter. Whatever Krishna has given, Krishna can take away. And for the sake of honor, for the sake of religion, for the sake of one's greater duty, spiritual duty, one should be ready to renounce anything. So he followed this example very carefully. As I said, he followed all the instructions of his gurus and the sadhus. When he returned, after the time of exile, Bharata Maharaj, of course, was very happy for him to return. Immediately went and gave him back his kingdom and said, "Now you please take it over." First thing he did was he gave it to the sadhus. He said, no, I'll give the king, I'll give this kingdom to all the sages and sadhus. And they said, "Well, thank you very much. That's very wonderful. But no, you take it." Because he was the ruler. He was the rightful ruler. And they were very, very happy for him to take his place. But again, he was not attached. Totally detached from any position, any honor, any wealth like that. Yeah. And of course, ultimately, to preserve religious principles, he ultimately renounced Mother Sita. Of course, this is a very sad part of this story. I think it's almost very painful. I always feel pain when I hear this, you know. But because some of the citizens were talking, were gossiping. Because a few citizens were gossiping about Mother Sita, he said that she had to leave so that he could demonstrate that he was, that they were completely pure. And so he showed the value of duty and the value of Dharma. This is one of the hallmarks of the appearance of Lord Ramachandra. This establishment of Dharma, this idea of religious principle, that one will perform whatever one needs to do, will make any sacrifice, you know, for the greater good of religious principles. Of course, this is almost unheard of today. You know, we don't see very many people who are willing to make these types of sacrifices or make almost any sacrifice in the name of religion or Dharma or for the sake of one's spiritual duty. But the devotee understands this very wonderful example that Lord Ramachandra gives. That because the devotee understands that everything is coming from God, everything is coming from Krishna, that nothing is ours. We are simply the temporary caretakers, just as Lord Ramachandra, Bharata Maharaj, they all considered we are caretakers of this kingdom to preserve it, to help the citizens, to do our duty. It is a matter of duty, not a matter of I get so much glorification. So this is the understanding of the Vaishnavas, the devotees of the Lord. That everything is the property of Krishna. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. Krishna is the supreme proprietor. And ultimately, Krishna is the supreme friend of everyone. So it's described in the Bhagavad Gita that one who knows these three things has perfect knowledge. In fact, Prabhupada said, this is the peace formula. Bhagavad Gita says that too. In order to attain perfect peace, we simply need to know that Krishna is the proprietor of everything, Krishna is the controller of everything, and that Krishna is the dearmost friend. And Ramachandra, although he was the personality of Godhead himself, he also demonstrated this. He showed this willingness to renounce anything for religious principle. So we have this very wonderful example on the appearance day of Lord Ramachandra. And of course, also very many wonderful pastimes that Lord Ramachandra exhibited, which are very dear to the devotees. But we understand that Lord Ramachandra, it wasn't that he was like a You know, like I often think of, you know, they have all these movies now with all these, what do they call them, superheroes, things like that. What incredible movies we could make of Lord Ramachandra and Krishna and Arjuna. I mean, these are real superheroes. They're real superheroes not only because they had incredible power, you know, that they could defeat all the forces of evil, but they also gave the example of duty, of religion, of compassion, of how to properly perform one's duty for the purpose of the glorification of God, for the purpose of spiritual life, to establish spiritual principles throughout the world. So these are the real superheroes. You know, the Ramachandras, Lord Krishna, all of our incarnations, but also the devotees. Also the great devotees, the sages and the sadhus who come to this earth. And they also establish religious principles and teach the same teachings of Lord Ramachandra and the same teachings of Lord Krishna and Bhagavad Gita. So we see in the same way, not exactly in the same way, but in a similar way, we understand that someone like Srila Prabhupada, who comes to this earth, and also has many, many not just inconveniences, but suffering, and so many difficulties, trials and tribulations, but never stopping, always determined to spread the message of Lord Krishna and the message of Lord Ramachandra throughout this earth. Yeah. So we not only have the examples of the incarnations of the Lord, but we have the examples of the devotees of the Lord, you know, who also unceasingly work to establish religious principles throughout the world, to bring people to spiritual life, to Krishna consciousness, to somehow change the society, the civilization, which is not protecting its citizens, which is causing only harm and distress. We have constant warfare. We have constant crime. We have constant problems throughout this world. We're destroying the environment. We're destroying our Earth planet. And who's really concerned? Some people are concerned, but people don't know what to do because they don't understand. At first, there must be God consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada has told us in these purports, in order to actually to establish the kingdom of God in this earth, you can't have it without God. So that was the point that Srila Prabhupada made in that purport, that we have to be willing to accept God's laws and God's principles and his words in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. And when we actually understand the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we follow that, then we're able to establish religious principles and make real change on this earth planet. So we may not be able to reestablish Ram Raj on this planet in Kali Yuga, but we certainly can do what we can to try to honor the religious principles and Dharma that Lord Ramachandra established. So I'll stop at that point. All glories to Lord Ramachandra. Thank you. Hare Krishna. So there are questions or comments? Anyone? Yes, Leolanda.
May I make one correction for you before that?
Sure.
You said that a mother of...
Please kindly allow me to make one correction. Mm-hmm. The mother of Bharata, she was envious. Kaikeyi was envious. Well, actually, originally, yeah. She wasn't. She was actually very happy that Ramachandra was going to be crowned.
Her maidservant came.
Her maidservant, yeah. Mantara, she actually poisoned her mind.
Yeah.
So that's also another example of what can happen when we get
bad
association.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yes, thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. Yes?
I have a question which is not related to today's class.
Okay.
But I just thought of asking this for a long time, and this is the right time to ask you. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between devotion and devotional service? And what happens if devotion does not transpire into devotional service?
Well, I guess there's a lot of ways that could be answered, and it kind of depends upon how you're defining those terms. But I guess I would say that devotion could be, the object of devotion could be anything. I could be devoted to my country, I could be devoted to my wife, I could be devoted to my pet, I could be devoted to, you know, to some cause, or I could be devoted to God. But devotional service is a little bit different. Devotional service basically is bhakti. You know, it's the English translation of bhakti. And bhakti means devotion to God. So true bhakti or devotional service means that the repository or the person that devotion, that love and that service is aimed towards is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's the real purpose of devotion. That's the best way that we can place our devotion. The other thing, the other part of what the definition, you mentioned devotional service. Service means is active. Sometimes we think of love or, you know, devotion being an abstract principle. The Prabhupada explains that devotional service is an active principle. It means that we're actually doing something. We are performing acts of devotion to God. Even if it's chanting his holy name or hearing his words, or whether it's serving the deity form of the Lord, or whether it's working for Krishna, cleaning the temple, whatever we may be doing, preaching the glories of the Lord to others, it's an active process. That's my understanding of devotional service. Okay. Yes, Prabhu. Okay, I'm sorry. We'll get, can we get over in the back wall first, and then other way.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for nice class. I was wondering, two questions, I think, but I'm, one is that sati rite, you know, we're mentioning how Mother Sita did the sati rite and walked into the fire. So I'm wondering historically when that ended, and if she is like just about the only person who would be able, of course, Parvati.
Yeah, I mean, the Sati rite originally was the wife of Lord Shiva, Parvati, or Sati, it was named for it, which was after the death. Sati was generally after the death of the husband. Of course, that wasn't quite the same as Sita. It was more of a process of showing her purity that she entered the fire and then, of course, came out unharmed. You know, that process, of course, is forbidden by law. It's illegal. Been for 100 years, I think, or 150 years in India. Mm-hmm. And it's not recommended in Kali Yuga.
Jack. The other question I had, Prabhu, was so in Kali Yuga, there are actually some parents, especially more like Western parents, that sometimes a mother may begin to want to befriend her child and not be giving many, many instructions and that kind of thing. And I'm wondering, like, is there some kind of, you know, that psychology?
You're saying where parents, whether they're mother or father, don't really take a kind of responsibility to give instruction to the child?
Right, and they try to be a friend or...
Yeah, of course it's all right to be a friend in one sense. In fact, Prabhupada said, you can be a friend to your child after they're, 16 or something? You know, but before that, he said, be like a tiger. You know, in other words, there's a time and place when it's appropriate. But when the child, of course, is young, they need instruction, they need direction, and that's the responsibility of parents. You know, to give that, just like Ramachandra took that responsibility, just like a father to give instruction and support and to protect the citizens. In the same way, the mother and the father, they give that same protection to a child. And part of that protection is instruction, because a child doesn't know what to do. You know, it doesn't really know what's right and wrong. They're learning, and that's the whole thing. There's a progression from a young child to an older child. They gradually get more and more responsibility to the point where they're ready to go on their own. I mean, it's a very sort of a logical, normal system. You know, but yes, that care must be there. In fact, and ultimately that spiritual concern must be there. It's described by Lord Rishabhadev that one should not be in a position of responsibility of a mother, a father, a teacher, a guru, a king, unless you're able to deliver your dependent from the cycle of birth and death. So that's the real responsibility. The real responsibility of the parent is to make sure that that child doesn't take birth again, which means giving them Krishna consciousness.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Prue, over here.
Yeah.
Wait for the microphone.
Yeah, according to my, you know, intelligence, you know, on the answer, Trevi Kram question.
Okay.
He wants to know about devotion and devotional service. Mm-hmm. Devotional service, I would say, is engaging your energy in the service of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could be dressed in the deities, and you know, this is your service. So you go, okay, put on some clothes, put on a flowers here, flowers there, and a flowers there. That is, you engage your energy in the service. But with devotion, you put these flowers by your head, one on a hand, one at Krishna's feet, you say, because of love, that is with devotion. So with devotion, and you could also do it without devotion, but you still engage in your energy in the service of the Lord.
That's a very nice point. Thank you very much. If everybody heard that, he was saying that part of the definition of bhakti, of devotion, means that there's also love. That one doesn't just do the service mindlessly, but one does it in the spirit of loving devotional service to the Lord. Of course, the definition of bhakti is given in Nectar of Devotion, Anyabhilashita Shunyam, that one engages one's service favorably to the Lord without tinge of jnana, karma, or rather anything else. That in other words, pure devotional service is meant to be favorable service to the Lord that doesn't have any material desires or mental speculation attached to it. So there's a nice description in Nectar Devotion in the first chapter. But actually, Prabhupada describes it in the preface or the introduction, exactly how Rupa Goswami defines devotional service. Okay. I think we ready for other things? Like the feast? All glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to Lord Ramachandra.